Welcome to Equiosity, the podcast about all things equine with a special emphasis on the horse-human bond. My name is Alexandra Kurland. I'm the author of Modern Horse Training, A Constructional Guide to Becoming Your Horse's Best Friend, and many other books and DVDs about clicker training. And I'm joined by Dominique Day, one of the co-founders of Cavalia. This is part four of a four-part conversation with Svenja Sawinski. If you are a regular listener to the podcast, you know Dominique and I talk frequently about topics that come up from the coaching sessions that are part of my online clinics. And that's very much what led to this series with Svenja. Svenja is one of the regular attendees at these coaching sessions. She has a horse who has been giving her a masterclass in teaching stillness and relaxation. In part one, Svenja introduced us to Darian, her Arab Barb cross. And when Svenja began with a very young Darian, she was still using traditional pressure-based training methods. That worked fine with her older horse because he would always back down from escalating pressure, but not Darian. In part one, Svenja described her discovery that you could teach a horse to stand still using clicker training. And for both Darian and Svenja, that was a transforming experience. In part two, Svenja shared how she taught Darian not just how to stand still, but how to settle into relaxation. We ended with stillness becoming a default behavior. In part three, Svenja expanded on the usefulness of default behaviors. She described how she used Darian's standing in stillness to clarify cues for him. Instead of guessing what she wanted or trying to throw behaviors at her in the hope that something that he was doing would work, the default of stillness gave Darian the clarity he needed to avoid frustration. I'm sure Svenja's description of the process made many of you sit up and take notice. It's a very useful strategy. You were probably hitting the replay button so you could listen again to her description of these procedures. Part four is also packed with moments like that, where you will want to hit the replay button to listen again. We'll be covering a lot of ground. Who knew there was so much to be said about standing still? So enjoy. But I think one of the things that really needs highlighting is when you said this growing appreciation of what an amazing behavior and how useful and powerful grown-ups are talking is. So, when I talk about the foundation behaviors, these are the six behaviors that I use to introduce horses to clicker training. And I know that many people think of them as a checklist. Oh, I got my horse to put his nose between his shoulders and I clicked and treated him a couple of times. Good, done that. Now can we move on to the fun stuff? Now can we move on to the stuff that I really want to teach? Can we teach this horse to stand still? There's stillness again. Can we teach this horse to line up next to a mounting block so I can get on when I ride? Can we fix the problems that are annoying me? And what we know is that the grown-ups are talking is a forevermore behavior. And that when you really develop it, you get what you have with Darian. You get a Grand Prix level standing in stillness. And that's when you really begin to appreciate and see how it is present in everything that you ask of him and how important a behavior it is, so that you can use it for body work, you can use it for performance work, you can use it, you're using it everywhere. So what is it like? So speak a little bit more about what it is like to have a Grand Prix level foundation behavior.
What I really like is that this summer we had the vet coming over a couple of times to draw blood. Two of those times, we did blood samples every 30 minutes for 2 hours. So it's not like 3 days later, the vet comes again and there's one time they will draw blood and that will be uncomfortable. And both in that situation and also when we do his teeth, both of those vets are usually looking at me, looking at the treat pouch, and I'm usually saying, well, you can either have me not treat the horse and then have an overly excited horse that will not cooperate and that we need to calm down again afterwards, or you can let me click and treat like 10 times. Afterwards, you can tell me if it doesn't fit because I don't know, like swallowing may interrupt drawing the blood, or my dentist isn't too fond of certain kinds of treats because they get stuck in the teeth and then she has to clean them extra properly before doing like treating his teeth. But I keep saying, you know, you can either spend this time of letting just letting me click and treat 10 times and you'll have a relaxed horse that will cooperate, or you cannot have that. And what I thought was amazing, that every person comments on that. Oh, he's such a nice horse. And we're back to he's such a nice and calm horse. And you're very lucky that I, the vet, can come in and draw blood 4 times in a row, and he will still cooperate and be okay, even though obviously the situation repeats itself and it's
Yeah, that's
always
part of
hurting.
the time he knows what's coming.
Yes. So it's not, yeah. So, and every time people comment on that, and every time I have to answer, and I cannot keep myself from that, I have to say, no, he actually is trained very well. And we have
Yes.
done this so often that this is not chance. And I keep referring back to his, for me, problematic behaviors, and people will not believe me. They will not believe that this very nice horse that lets you do, it feels like almost anything to him, that this horse can explode in a second if you do not explain things properly to him and he's unsure of what is expected from him. So this is our, like, you know, it's our, yeah, safe behavior, and people do appreciate it. What they do not, as we just pointed out, what they do not see is how much training and how much nuances there are that you need to keep track of to get this kind of behavior.
Yeah. If he were a cheetah in a zoo, they would get it. You know, because they certainly in the zoo world, they are teaching with protective contact, they're teaching just amazing, amazing training in terms of the cooperative care and having animals present whatever body part is appropriate for whatever the medical procedure is, blood draws, whatever. And so when you see a lion or a cheetah or, you know, even the ungulates, a giraffe, and they're cooperating for a blood draw, you go, oh yeah, I get it. There's training involved in that. I get it. When it's a horse, it's like, well, he's just a really nice horse.
I would add to that, I'm always very stunned by those videos as well, because you see that it's active medical training. I have to admit, I have not done that with Darian. We
Well,
have
but
never.
just a nuance, you have to remember, you know, because it's true. Sometimes we look at this and we think, oh, I should be doing more of this. In a zoo, they have like all this personnel, and that's what they do, right? They train the medical care. So just so we have a little bit less guilt, Yes. we're alone with our horse trying to train. You know, many different things, including some husbandry and some medical care, but
We just have to let ourselves off the hook a little bit compared to what some of this work is done in the zoos.
And they're not doing, they're not doing other, they're not teaching the lions to lunge and, and to line up next to a mountain. Yeah, and so there are a whole lot of things that they're not engaging their training time in, and they are in a program where blood draws are done on a routine basis because they have a vet on staff who is monitoring many health parameters in these animals that is a little bit different than what we typically have in a stable. So yes, you're right. And Svenja, I'm always in awe when I see some of the training that's being done in the and what I really tend to appreciate in some of the zoo work that I've seen is how creative they are in the environmental setup. And I think that we can learn a lot. That's another topic, but I think we can learn a lot in terms of creative environmental setup that makes our job easier. But you're absolutely right that you aren't working directly on the medical procedures, and yet Darian knows how to settle and relax, and so it has generalized to the point where you can have a context that is unusual, such as the blood draw, and the behavior holds.
Yes, and that's something, it's a study of one, right? I don't
Right.
know if another horse trained with a lot of history on standing still, let's like on grown-ups, would show the same behavior. But that is one of the parts you were asking of what it's like to have this superstar standing still horse. I did not tr specifically train blood draws, and yet he's able to say, okay, if you're two people coming in and you're saying five clicks, the hot behavior is standing still, then I'll stand still. I'll say whatever happens with me. It's very definitely not true. But he has this confidence that he knows what is expected from him in that situation. And I did not train blood draw or cooperative, like a yes signal or like none of that. The only communication or the cue we start into that situation into is I click you for standing still. First, the rate of reinforcement is high. Then I'm putting longer breaks into like I'm lowering the frequency in which I'm feeding, and you know it's standing still, and that gives a lot like into any kind of these situations. So it's interesting that I'm usually with him alone. So every time someone comes with me, it's usually someone who's treating him as well. So it's most of the times it's my hoof trimmer. But then it's the dentist, or it's the vet, or it's someone, it's a second person that will touch him. And also there we have a certain generalization. Like every time you're in that situations where two people are standing next to you, the hot behavior is you just keep standing still. There's nothing else we want from you. And it just brings us back to the it's built into our whole lives. Even though it's not that noticeable anymore, it's very systematic still, and it gives him a lot of security.
Yes. And I think it's well worth, circling back to where we started, where I had you talk about Darian. This is not a simple, straightforward, easygoing horse. You have a complex individual with a very strong personality who is not simply going to go, well, whatever you want, dear, and that in the time that I have known him and the way that I've known him, which is via video, what I can see in him is that this is a complex horse that needs to be handled with skill, sensitivity, and with systematic training, or everything is just going to fall apart. You're going to have a mess. And there is an underlying physical, there's something physically going on that gets in the way of Darian just saying, hey, I'm cool with everything.
It's your first summary was so interesting because you used almost the same words his breeder used when she told me about this foal I was going to want to look at and get to know. So I had looked at photos, and then I met him when he was, I think, about 3 months old. He was always, maybe now we're going into the introduction you wanted in the first place, but so I went there, he was 3 months old, and there were six foals in that herd. He has never been the one to explore things before any of the other foals. He always needed one of the other foals to take the first step. So let's say we put some, I don't know, some weird object onto the field.
Okay.
And he would not ever be the first horse to explore that. He is quite insecure with those new things. He will follow a nosy other foal, but he will keep his distance, and he will be the second or the third horse that will interact.
He's the penguin on the ice floe who is going, you go first, you go first. You see if the water is safe.
Yes. And then, but he is very, I'll use the word dominant. So he will be the most dominant horse in the herd when it comes to resources, pretty much every resource. And this is all
have all the skills to be a survivor, right? I mean, he's the first to eat and drink, but if the ice is not, if he's not sure the ice is frozen, he'll send someone else on the lake to check if it's safe to go on it or not.
Yes.
So he's a, you know, he has everything perfect to be surviving.
That's so accurate. And then this comes with the tendency to fight instead of flee. So when you startle him, like I had a situation where a person on a bicycle was coming from behind us and was passing us quite close, and that person startled me as well. But I was very, very lucky because I could only hear that Darian hit a tree with his hind legs. And that could have been that person, but that person was already past us. But this is the reaction when he's surprised and startled, and there's no other, like he will not jump forward, he will kick out. So he, as you said, he brings all the qualities that make him a survivor. And then, well, he does like to interact with you. But then on top of this personality, we have the stifle issues I mentioned in the beginning.
Yes.
So the combination of this actually makes it very difficult or very, very critical to listen to very subtle signs that he sends you if he's not okay with the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you work in a way where you don't have a whip in your hands where you can just, you know, make space in between you and the horse. So, yeah.
Yeah, assuming that whip in your hand would actually work, because on some horses, it just escalates things. But I think what you have been describing, what we've been talking about this whole time, gives a lot of people a lot of hope for their own situation, where they are dealing with horses that feel, I want to say, overwhelming to them, because at times these really complex horses, and because Darian, he may have a stifle issue, but he's also very athletic. So he's very powerful. He can move very fast. And so when you get flummoxed by one of these horses, and where things are feeling out of control, where maybe you've tried some of the clicker training and what you've gotten is, yeah, the horse is doing the behaviors, but he's anxious. He's throwing them at you. There's a tension there. And if you make a mistake, then that just escalates the tension and the grabbing for the treats and you know that you're on borrowed time because he's just not going to tolerate you being, you're making, you human are making mistakes. It can feel really discouraging. And what you are offering is a lifeline. You're really throwing a lifeline out there to say, you know, stillness. It is so, so important. And it is something that we can teach. You can introduce stillness very quickly. You know, tiny little increments of stillness, but you can begin to get stillness and stillness with relaxation very quickly. And then over time, you can build that into Grand Prix level stillness so that your complex horse becomes a great companion and best friend and training partner and not a horse that makes you sort of quake in your boots every time you think, oh, I have to go out to the barn now, but where you really can appreciate the teacher that he is. Would you say that's a fair statement as I'm describing where you are with Darian?
I would, and I would add that, like, one of those core things I learned from you is that's the starting point that you need, whatever issues there may be for the horse, where you can start exploring what is possible and what is not. Because you have this place of stillness and relaxation, and now you can start out to pretty systematically check what is possible. Is it possible for you to move your weight a little bit? Is it possible for you to take half a step and then reverse out of that? Is it possible for you to go forward, to go backward, to like any movement you might want to ask for? And every time you see that you either will, you lose that attitude of relaxation or you can't really go back to stillness, that's where you know, okay, this was too much for the horse.
Yeah.
And this goes both for the personality and for the issues any horse might have with their body or any person really.
Right.
But so in this case, there's nothing diagnosed, but I'm pretty confident that it doesn't matter anyway, because as long as I stay in a zone where we both feel comfortable, then I'm very sure I'm not damaging anything. And I'm very sure I'm safe as well.
Yes.
Because he's not going to explode. And so, yes, that's the baseline to start from.
And what you just described is a form of body work. It's very similar to some of the explorations that I associate with some of the Feldenkrais work of, you know, can you shift your balance to forward or back or left or right without even necessarily picking up a foot, but it's just, can you shift your balance? Yes, click and treat. And then can you go back to your base stillness? Can you shift here? Ooh, that just got that change in facial expression. That just got a change in the respiration, a change in the feel of the muscles. What's that about? So it allows you to do some very subtle exploration that also then can let the learner discover, well, actually, I can shift my balance because I'm coming from a place of relaxation. Yeah, it is possible for me to make that shift of balance, and I can learn how to do that without locking up my stifles and creating a problem for myself, which is how
I want to bring us to something that we haven't talked about regarding the coaching sessions.
Okay.
Because I find this is typical of the beauty of the coaching sessions, and that's the contribution of the participants.
Yes.
You have to remember now, people who are listening to this, that this whole conversation started because of a 2-minute video, and probably the reason why you were showing us this video had nothing to do with this conversation. I don't remember what was your reason, Alex, for picking this 2-minute video. It doesn't matter. The idea is that you showed this video. We had this discussion right after, including Anita, and then we went on to something else.
Yes.
And a few weeks later, Svenja sent us like a 3-page, or sent you rather, a 3-page email saying, if you want to share it with the others, because I promised I would think about this and write something about it. And you did, you shared it with us. And, you know, for me, it was so valuable when I received this. I thought, wow, this is great. You know, coaching session value continuing weeks afterwards. And this is, I find that people bring a lot to the coaching sessions.
Yes.
You know, and I know every time you're there, Svenja, I'm always happy, you know, because I know I love the way you articulate, the way you think about training. And I know, you know, that you're going to bring something to the table. And there are a lot of people who have, I mean, everyone has something to bring to the table. It's very fluid because you don't, Alex, you have a plan when you begin the coaching session, but sometimes we just go on these tangents, just like we did now. And they're super valuable because they're real life too.
Yeah.
And they force us to deepen, to go into more layers and not just say, well, you have to keep a high rate of reinforcement if you want your animal to be happy. Well, we just talked about something completely different now for 2-3 hours, yeah. Right? And it's real and it's working. So I just want to say that, because we haven't talked about that, but I feel that, and we get to know the participants, we get to know their horses, and we see them evolve. And, you know, Svenja and I have never met in the real life, but I'm sure that if there were an event at some point, I would feel like I already know you. And, yeah, you know, I'd be very happy to spend some time with you. So, yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that, of course, Alex has, you know, this great way of teaching, but I think the format allows for very interesting contribution from the participants.
Yes. And I'm definitely seeing that people are clearly learning from one another. And we are watching some really good handling, and it's spreading. It's lovely. So it's great.
And it's very nice of you, Dominic, to say that. I was in Canada last summer, and I did have similar thoughts, but I did notice Canada is like large. So wherever you are, it might still be very far away,
yeah,
from where I am.
Might be a 10-hour flight.
Right. But yeah, I agree. And I think it's especially valuable since, so we started out pretty much randomly looking at the videos. So everyone sent something in and we were looking at the videos, and there were a couple of things to notice depending on where you are in your own learning process. But when Alex changed the format in a way that she said, okay, I'll cluster certain videos that have similar topics together, I'll see if I can put them into a sequence that the whole coaching session has a certain theme, like a path that you can follow, I think that even became like more valuable.
Well, you know, the coaching sessions have been really an interesting shaping process. Because when you think, you know, it was shaping by approximation. I did not know how they were going to work. I did not know what people were going to send in. I don't know who's going to sign up for them. So that those first couple of coaching sessions were rough approximations. And every coaching session been evolving and changing over time. And I do like where we have come to now. And we're able to do that because we have timelines on some of these horses. So we're not just looking at 2 minutes of video that were taken last week, but we can now go back and look at where was this horse 6 months ago, 2 years ago, and we can look at changes over time, which is really fascinating, really fascinating. So that changes the nature of the coaching session. And one of the things that I really love is, you know, as I'm putting together, assembling all these video clips, so we have more video than we can look at in the course of the coaching session, but you start to see these threads that go through. Oh, look, there's somebody teaching, the grown-ups are talking to a horse who's just learning, and the handler is just learning. And here are some details that we might want to tweak, but now let's follow that thread. And oh, look at stillness in Dari. And this is why, when you're thinking about, do I really want to spend all this time standing next to my horse and clicking and reinforcing him for just standing still? What's the point? You know, all of those things that must go through people's heads as they're teaching. Let me go do some other things. They're not valuing the grown-ups are talking. But when you start to see horses at different stages in the training, I think it really does help you to appreciate all six of those foundation lessons and what they do for you. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Dominique, but I interrupted you, Svenja. You were about to say something else.
No, I mainly want to add, and it does not just make you appreciate what you're teaching. It's what keeps you motivated. So when we're thinking about gold diamonds questions about where do you want to go? Where are you now in relation to that goal? What steps do you need to take to reach your goal? And then what keeps you motivated along the way? That's one of those parts. So actually, this is not a goal I had set myself to have a superstar stillness horse. I actually really still, I really want to ride.
Yes, of course.
which is interesting because I know I sent the first actual riding videos this summer because the stillness lesson has enabled me to go through a teaching process to reach that point. And then winter and mud season came So what keeps us motivated, relating this to the coaching sessions, I think this is part of what keeps the people motivated to come back, is I can see where I want to go. There's a whole picture in my head, and I get feedback on where I am along that way to reach that goal that makes me want to come back and learn more about grown-ups are talking.
Yes. And who knew that grown-ups are talking was a performance, you know, takes us out of foundation lessons and straight into upper level performance work, but it does. So it's very neat. You had one question a few minutes ago, Dominique, about when you're shaping something new, how does the horse know? And of course, one of the answers to that is when you are shaping and you have shifted into a different behavior, that the criterion that you're going to shift to is already present before you shift and make that the clickable moment. So you are not searching into a void for a clickable moment. And I think that would be the quick answer to that.
Yeah, I think too that there are, because if we use the example where you were saying, well, the behavior I'm looking for is leg lifts, and so I want the horse to wait for my cue to touch his leg, I think it was, so that when I touch his withers, his shoulder, whatever else, he's just standing still and waiting. So I was asking, well, how does he know that he shouldn't be looking for something else? And I think, too, that a part of the answer is when you touch his shoulder, let's say, and you're looking really to have the leg lift on cue with a touch to his leg. And then let's say next time you want to teach him shoulder targeting on your hand, okay? I think that there will be other changes, even if whether you are aware of them or not, but you there will be changes in the way you touch that shoulder versus how you touched it when you were trying to clarify the cue for the leg lift. I think when you do the body targeting on the shoulder, there will be other things than just your hand on the shoulder that will help the horse differentiate that this is not the same. She's touching my shoulder, but it's not the same as when she's touching my shoulder.
Yeah, you're prompting another rabbit hole, right? So two things. One is that systematic discrimination of the cues. Plus, I have never, because of certain extinction behaviors Darian is showing, I avoid creating an environment where there's a free shaping scenario happening. I will always arrange the environment very specifically for what I want to teach. And if that doesn't work, I will change the environment. So again, if I've thought about a context where I think it's likely to now get a shoulder moving towards me when I'm touching the shoulder instead of not getting anything anymore, and he still goes for, well, I learned to stand still. Mm-hmm. When you're touching my shoulder, I will start to become creative in arranging the environment. And this, so maybe I would kind of refer people back to Michaela and Blondie's cribbing project, where, you know, if I've been so thorough that Darian thinks touching my shoulder is standing still, then I need to create a very, very different environment where it's more likely that he will not have generalized that and try to get that behavior in that very different setting, and then start nudging my way into getting the shoulder target, for example, then in different situations. So it's really shaping in a certain environment and then trying to transfer that back into where I actually want to have the behavior. Yeah, so that would be a strategy I would use. But again, I've tried to not create a free shaping scenario where he really just tries whatever he may have in his head. He usually has environmental cues and a very straightforward setting of the exercise I want to teach. Mm-hmm. So that there's, yeah, but I just increase the likeliness very, very much of what I want to have. Yeah.
So you're not using, as a general teaching strategy, you're not using trial and error guessing.
Yeah.
And you are setting up scenarios so that you know, it's the, in the loopy training, we talk about that kernel, that tiny kernel of a behavior, that starting, what is the starting movement cycle? And we are training at the start of the movement cycle. So when we're looking at micro shaping, I think one of the ways of thinking about micro shaping is you may have a big movement cycle that you're going to be mapping out and heading into, but you're starting by starting at the initiation of movement into that movement cycle. And so you're starting looking for really tiny, tiny shifts and changes, and cues evolve with the shaping process. So over time, the cues will evolve and change and shift, and the context in which those cues are the active, this, you know, this is the active turn on the behavior cue, but all these other movements aren't part of that. Those differentiations evolve with the behavior, and they can evolve with the behavior in a clean way because you are a systematic trainer.
when you start into clicker training, I think there's a lot of emphasis on that, like, what's the cue? Are you very clear on discriminating it from everything else that you're doing? And you put a new cue before the old cue so that you're transferring cues if you want to have something else. That
but even more than that, there's a lack of recognition of cues. So they're saying, you know, when you have the behavior, now we can attach a cue to it, not noticing that
there already are cues.
There already are cues that when you shifted your balance forward a little bit and he shifted his balance a little bit at the same time, that's a cue. You know, when you're looking for the horse, when you want to click and reinforce the horse when he puts his ears forward and you look up at the horse's ears, because how else are you going to know if his ears moved? You're looking at his ears as a cue.
You know what's funny too, even amongst clicker trainers who are aware of this?
Yeah.
You sometimes hear people say, well, I didn't give him any cue. Well, except of course for, and then they name the cue.
Yeah.
It's like they know that environment can be a cue. And so they will, the way they say it, I didn't give him a cue, but except for, of course, the fact that I presented a target.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe not as obvious as that. There's a resistance to kind of recognize that the except for is the cue.
That's partially why I had to send an email and I couldn't give you an answer to your question about the bodywork right off, because I had to think about it. So Darian's and my communication evolved out of the shaping process, like out of our learning history together. And it's not something that is consciously happening anymore, especially with a complex behavior like this. Like my tendency was, like, how did you teach this? I never taught it. And also there's no cue for him to stand still, but it's not true. So I had to start thinking about both of these things. Like, one was the complex shaping process we're talking about here, which is not a straightforward, this is standing still that I taught, but also I tend to say it in the absence of other cues.
Right,
but
right.
It's not there is something, but what's the combination of cues that makes him settle? And I the most obvious one is I'm clicking five times for standing still, and then but there are probably other cues that I cannot tell you, but there that are consistent, because otherwise it wouldn't work.
Yeah,
but I can't tell you because they happen and I don't notice. And that's where you start answering, there's no cue. I don't know why the animal is doing the thing.
Yeah, you're just and, lucky.
You know, because it can be complex, you know, even how you reinforce and the kind of reinforcer can be an antecedent to what's coming up and become part of the cue. So it's not that straightforward. It's not that simple. And I'm sure, you know, if we had behavior analysts there, they could make it even more.
But the reason that this conversation is so important, and the reason that the conversation that occurred in the coaching session and then that later prompted you to send the email, is because otherwise you might say, well, you know, I don't know what I really did. It just, we, you know, he just does it. He's just, you know, it just, and it becomes that sort of, oh, well, she's just a horse whisperer and it's magic. And it's not useful, because then Darian truly does become a one-off study of one and only one. But when you start to dissect it, then you begin to see that, oh, there is a process and I can teach it deliberately. And other people can now experiment and explore these ideas and deliberately go through a teaching process. And now Darian isn't in a class of one by himself, but others begin to have similar experiences where they can teach Grand Prix level stillness, and there is a deliberate process for getting there. And yes, there will be variations on the theme to adapt to each individual, but it is a deliberate, teachable, transferable process.
So you were saying this is a story of giving people hope that if they have complex horses, there's a way that they can actually use this kind of training and be successful and have a happy and healthy relationship with their horse. I want to switch the focus because on myself. So I always thought, also with my older horse, I always wanted to be like in a certain class of riding. So I got him from a riding school. He already was kind of old then, and I wanted to do everything right. And I wanted to, like, you know, and I was very, very frustrated because for years I didn't make any progress. And I always felt like I'm that clumsy person that just doesn't know how to move and just cannot, you know, get to that precision in giving cues and like riding aids. And like, it's just me. I've always blamed me that somehow I don't get what I need to do, how I need to move my body. I'm the kind of person that like standing in front of an audience and I'm talking at a whiteboard, I'm not nervous or anything, but I keep throwing pencils around because my body seems to forget how much pressure I need to apply on like keeping my grip on that pen. What I want to say is I do not have a good body awareness, and I'm not the kind of person that I would call, you know, she's a natural in movement and just, you know, moving her body. And still what I've learned, and this is something that I never learned with a teacher next to me, which is really interesting, but I learned it from your online courses and I learned it from the Feldenkrais lessons with Anita, is how to break things down in a way that I can learn those skills and I can be very precise in the communication with my horse. And it's not like it's coming natural to me. It's just that for the first time, I have a way of teaching myself in the increments that I need to not say, yeah, well, you need to jump into the air and turn three times before landing again. And I just can't do it. So I'll probably never be able to be a good rider. I'm starting from a very I'm not an athletic person, and still I can learn those skills because there's a certain teaching process behind it. It's not something people can, it's not magic, it's not horse whispering, it's basic movement skills broken down in a way that they're accessible to me.
It works for the horses and it works for us too, huh?
Yes. And I totally get that because I'm also not the, you know, that naturally athletic person that you pick first to be on your softball team or whatever. And that the whole discovery of the process of exploring balance in a way that makes more things doable, possible, and enjoyable, you know, where you really can start to enjoy movement because you're not running into door frames and tripping over your own 2 feet. I think that's a really important and powerful statement. And I think it's a great statement to end on. So I think that's where we will end. And we'll say, thank you enormously for a really, really, really great, great conversation.
Thanks for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk about this, because obviously I like to do that. And this has been really fun.
Good, good, because it's been fun for us. So we'll do it again. Thank you for listening. Normally, I try to keep our afternoon conversations to 3 episodes at the most. But I think you'll agree, This one needed the full four parts. There's so much packed into these episodes. I suspect these are episodes that you're going to be listening to many times over. Who knew there was so much to be said about standing in stillness? And of course, we could easily have gone on talking for much longer, but Svenja lives in Germany, and with the time difference for her, it was getting late, so we did need to find a stopping place. And of course, grown-ups is just one of six foundation lessons. As you develop each one from those first beginning steps into Grand Prix level, so just think of Grand Prix level standing on a mat or Grand Prix level head lowering. Just imagine what that would be like. Think of all the training doors that would open for you and for your horse. And the fun of all of this is it is accessible to everyone. As Svenja said, you don't have to be the natural athlete, the horse whisperer, the superstar trainer to have a superstar horse. Clicker training gives us a path forward to building a superstar relationship with all of our horses. So train well and have fun with your horses.